Big Red Bench. Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m. Cork's Red FM.
Yeah, good evening and welcome to the Big Red Bench. It's Colm O'Sullivan with you through until 7 o'clock with a busy, busy show tonight. Lots going on in the world of sport. Coming up between now and 7, we talk football. The Euros, last 16 of Euro 2020, is underway. Ronnie Whelan will join us very shortly as we look ahead to all of the matches in the last 16 at Euro 2020. We also reflect on Cork City's defeat to Shelburne last night in Tolka Park. We hear from City Manager Colin Healy and Cork City legend George O'Callaghan. We look ahead to a big night for the Cork Lady Footballers in the final up in Croke Park. They take on arch rivals Dublin. We'll chat to Ger McCarthy live from Croke Park and hear from boss Evie Fitzgerald as well. And we'll have athletics as Valerie chats to Jessie Barr, current Team Ireland member ahead of the Olympics in Tokyo. Yeah, all that and so much more to come between now and 7 o'clock here on Cork's Red FM. It's Colm O'Sullivan with you on a busy Saturday of sport. Are you enjoying the Euros like I am? It has been absolutely magnificent, fantastic, some absolute crackers of games in the group stages. And now we are into the last 16 at the Euros. And the first game of the last 16 is underway. It's the Welsh. Wales are in action over in the Amsterdam Arena. And it's like a home game for Denmark because the stadium is full of Denmark fans, because Welsh fans weren't permitted to travel to Amsterdam, but no problem with the Danes coming in apparently. So halftime there at the Amsterdam Arena, not looking good for Wales. It is Wales 0, Denmark 1 at halftime. Kasper Dahlberg with the goal for Denmark there after 27 minutes. So I wonder, can Wales get back into that in the second half? We'll keep you up to date right across the show here. Later on this evening, the second game of the day in the Euros is Italy taking on Austria. And Ronnie Whelan will be joining us live very, very shortly to chat about all the Euros games of the last 16. Some great crackers of ties in there over the next few days, the likes of Belgium versus Portugal, and the one I think we're all looking forward to is on Tuesday evening at 5 o'clock, England versus Germany at Wembley. That should be a real, real showdown there between England and Germany. Elsewhere today, just wrapping up some of the sport that's going on for you here at home in the League of Ireland. It's third against fourth in the SSE Airtricity League Premier Division this evening. Sligo Rovers hosting Bohemians at the Showgrounds at 7:45. A win for Sligo there would move them level on points with leader St. Pat's at the top of the league. So big incentive for Sligo to get a victory there. In the First Division, Cove Ramblers host Wexford at 7 p.m. Cove Ramblers way down towards the bottom, like Cork City at the moment, unfortunately, but a win there would see them leapfrog City as things stand against Wexford. 7 o'clock kickoff there in St. Coleman's Park. In Gaelic games, Limerick, they will play reigning champions Cork. We're going to face Limerick lads in the semi-finals of the Munster Senior Football Championship. That's after their win today. Ian Corbett, Killian Fahey, Hugh Burke and Robbie Burke all scoring goals as Limerick eased to a 4-18-12 points victory over Waterford at the Gaelic grounds. And later on this evening at 7 o'clock, Kerry hosting Clare in Killarney. Plenty more Gaelic games action around this afternoon as well. Dublin were in action earlier on too, and a good win for Dublin. Dublin's entire full forward line hitting the net in their 3-31-22 points win against Antrim in the Leinster Hurling Quarters. Keane O'Sullivan, Ronan Hayes, Keane Boland all raise green flags for Maddie Kenny's side, who will play Galway now in the semis. Elsewhere then this evening, as I mentioned, in the ladies football, it is Cork facing Dublin in the Lidl Ladies National Football League final. It's a repeat of last year's All-Ireland final, with the Rebels looking for revenge following Dublin's win last time out. Throw-in in Croke Park is at 7:30, and we will go live to Croke Park later on in the show and join Ger McCarthy, who was at that game for us. Meanwhile, in Division 1A of the Red FM Hurling Leagues, Glen Rovers hosting Newcestown. Throw-in there is at 7 p.m. In rugby, the Lions got off to a winning start ahead of their tour of South Africa. A good win for them against Japan at Murrayfield today. Warren Gatland's side winning their 28-10, but they have been hit with an injury scare, the Lions, ahead of that tour next week, because captain Alan Wynne-Jones was forced off in the first half of today's warm-up game against Japan with a shoulder injury. So they will monitor that closely, I would imagine, over the coming days before they head off for South Africa and the first game of the tour next weekend. And we will have a big coverage of that over the next couple of weeks here on Cork's Red FM as well. Plenty golf going on this weekend as well. Just update you there on the golf too. And there's Irish interest in the golf because Niall Kearney is 6 shots off the lead after 3 rounds at golf's BMW International Open. He is 11 under after signing for a round of 71 in Germany today. Norway's Victor Hovland takes a 3-shot lead there into the final round on 17 under. Elsewhere, Seamus Power will tee off in the next hour from 7 under par at the Travellers Championship on the PGA Tour of the Waterford Brand, 2 shots off the leader Jason Day there. Now we will talk Cork City after the defeat to Shelburne up in Talca Park last night. They actually played pretty well in that game, but unfortunately beaten 2-1 by Shells in that game. But first of all, we're going to talk about the Euros because it's all about the Euros at the moment and we're all loving the football. It's a football festival and it's great, and there's been absolute crackers of games, as I mentioned. And we're joined by a man who's played in the Euros himself back in Euro 88, a famous one for Ireland under Jack Charlton. Mr. Ronnie Whelan joins us. And Ronnie, as I said, it has been a wonderful Euros so far. Are you enjoying the football?
I think it's been magnificent. There's been an awful lot of good about it. If we had great crowds, if the stadiums were full, it'd be an awful lot better, but they're still making a lot of noise. And VAR hasn't spoiled it yet.
Yeah, it hasn't at all, really, actually. I think it's being implemented better in the Euros than it was, or than it is in the Premier League, certainly. Anyway, Ronnie, I saw you at some of the games as well, and you were lucky enough to be in Wembley last week for England versus Scotland. That must have been some experience. I saw you there, yourself and George Hamilton, down by the side of the pitch. And, I mean, what a game, what an atmosphere, and a crowd back in Wembley as well. Fantastic.
And what was it? 25,000, whatever it was. Yeah. It wasn't, but they made an awful lot of noise, especially the jocks. But they were magnificent on the night, Scotland. They played really, really well. England struggling for me at the moment. But yeah, but to be back inside the ground, do the commentaries from there, the atmosphere, it was great.
Yeah, I was very jealous, I have to say. We're going to go through the last 16 games in depth now for the next little while, Ronnie, and chat through who we think will go through to the quarterfinals and maybe who will be potential winners and so on. We know the Wales and Denmark game is ongoing at the moment, as we mentioned, but later on at 8 o'clock tonight, then it's Italy versus Austria. And I don't want to call Italy the surprise package of the tournament, because we knew beforehand they were a very, very good side, but I think they've even surpassed people's expectations, and they've been really, really impressive, haven't they?
Yeah, we knew they were good coming into the competition because they'd won a lot of games under their new manager. So everything was geared towards a good tournament. They seem to be very close-knit. You know, you look at the games, the defence are magnificent. Spinazzola, the left full back, he's causing problems getting down that wing. They've got problems coming at you everywhere. Midfield's very, very good, very clever. Forwards are all moving about up front. So I can't see anything more than Italy to win this one. Really, really good side. I think they could go very, very close to winning.
Yeah, I think they're going to do well overall, and a lot of people picking them as potential winners now, Italy. We're going to move on to Sunday, Ronnie, and a couple of good games on Sunday. First up is Netherlands and Czech Republic. Now, we've seen Czech Republic. We saw them the other night against England, and they've impressed, I think, in some of their games. Your man Patrick Schick up front looks very, very impressive. He got that cracker of a goal against Scotland. But Netherlands have been very, very good themselves. So they've been very strong. But do you think Czech Republic could pose a threat to Netherlands on Sunday?
I think from now on in, all these 8 games are all going to be pretty tough. You know, they're tough to call. You know, although we've seen the Czech Republic, you mentioned it, they're really, really good. Schick scored in goals, magnificent goal. But then you look at the Dutch and they look smart now. They look, Wijnaldum's getting forward, scoring plenty of goals. Dumfries coming up from fullbacks. You know, you talk about Spinazzola at Italy on the left. On the right, Dumfries has been magnificent for the, yes, for the Dutch. So they've got, the Dutch have got players that are going to hurt you. The young in midfield, the pie up front. There's players there of a level that, for me, are better than the Czech Republic. So, yeah, the Dutch they'll go through, but none of them are going to be easy, these games.
Probably the tie of the round then, along with England and Germany, is going to be Belgium and Portugal at 8 o'clock on Sunday night. And that's a cracker of a tie. I mean, both sides have unbelievable players. Ronaldo has been unstoppable again for Portugal. He's top scorer in the tournament as it stands. 5 goals already. He's 36, 37 years of age, and there's no stopping Ronaldo. He's unbelievable, isn't he?
Amazing. Amazing footballer. He's always been an amazing footballer, but now at 36 years of age, He's breaking all sorts of records, you know, international scoring records, tournament records. It's just an amazing amount of records he's got. But he's the major problem Belgium have got to face. And I thought Belgium were struggling themselves early on. Well, the first game, second game, when all the players started coming on that were on the bench, De Bruyne, Hazard, Witsel, and then Lukaku was up front. And then you've seen a different Belgium. It was against Denmark, wasn't it, where they started ripping them apart with passes and goals. Yeah, so Belgium look pretty good. And I think they'll win this game against Portugal. But again, it won't be close for Ronaldo about.
Two more games on Monday then, Ronnie. And the first one is Croatia versus Spain. Two teams that are kind of fading, people have been saying, from the heights they once were at. But we've seen them both playing in the tournament now. And Croatia, even though they're a team, people were saying, on the slide since the highs of the 2018 World Cup, they've played fairly well in some games. We saw them against Scotland the other night, got some nice goals. And Spain, for their part, they won 5-0 during the week against Slovakia, I know. But that doesn't mask the slide they're on, really. And they're not the Spain we know over the last decade. They're nowhere near the same level, really, sure they're not.
No, not at all, Spain. You look at the team sheet at the start of the game and you're thinking, who does he play for? Is he Atletico or Real? Or who? You look at the names that are not there anymore. It's just unbelievable. Xavi Alonso as well. Iniesta, Torres, where are all these players? They've moved on. They've got older. And I don't think this squad coming through now is as good. He's left Thiago out, you know, whether he needs, there's something wrong with him and he's trying to clear up an injury. But I felt that if he goes in there, Busquets has come back in after COVID. So, but Spain are not playing well, and Croatia could maybe even sneak this game. But you'd be very surprised if Spain went down the last 16, but there's a huge possibility that they could.
Then the second game on Monday is France versus Switzerland. Now, you'd certainly expect the French to beat the Swiss, Ronnie, but, I mean, they haven't been overly impressive. They've got an unbelievable squad of players. Big things are expected. They were one of the favourites to win the tournament coming into it. But so far, they've impressed in some games and not impressed in others, it's fair to say, isn't it? If you look at the first game, they beat the Germans, and they haven't really impressed much since then, though, have they?
No, they've huffed and they've puffed. The first half against Germany, they were very, very good. I think because it's been so far back, people tend to forget that Germany were very good in the second half. And France looked as if they didn't know where to go, what was going on. Benzema, he scored a couple of goals now, but he was struggling a bit, and Mbappe hasn't scored. So it's going to be, you've got to think France are going to win it, but they need to play an awful lot better if they're going to win the tournament. They'll beat Switzerland. But are they good enough to want to win the tournament? They have to improve an awful lot. I think Deschamps has said it already. We're not playing great, but we've done what we came to do. We're through, we're top of the group. We've done our bit till here. Now we should get started to play better.
So on to Tuesday then, and the first game on Tuesday at 5 o'clock is the big one that we are all really, really looking forward to. Very, very excited for this game. Whenever England play Germany, it's an absolutely massive clash. And I think, Ronnie, England so far, they topped their group, but they've only scored two goals. They haven't conceded any goals, but they've only scored two goals, both of those coming from Sterling. They struggled against Scotland big time. And I think Harry Kane not getting goals is a worry for them as well. They're maybe not playing quite as well as they would have hoped with the squad of players available to them. But then Germany, for their part, haven't been overly impressive either. So, I mean, this is a game that could go either way, I think. But England will be hopeful they can get past Germany this time.
I think it's two teams that are struggling in the competition so far. Germany have played well in patches, but they need to improve an awful lot. You know, the result, the 2-2, they have to be better than the result the other night. But they did really, really well against Portugal. Portugal struggled in that game. But two teams for me that are struggling really badly in this competition. Kane is nowhere to be seen at the moment. The manager doesn't know. He wants to play Phillips and Rice in midfield, but he's not 100% for me sure what to put ahead of him. The three ahead, Kane up front. He's not. I don't think he's ever, since the start of the tournament, before the tournament, had a team in his head that goes, this is my best 11 and I will play this. Unless he's got up his sleeve now and starts bringing out a different formation. I don't know why he needs two defenders. It's England, they're playing at Wembley. One defensive midfielder, I mean. Play Rice or Phillips, yep, who you fancy, and then put four in front of them and let's go and attack teams. I think England will have enough, because I don't think Germany are playing well enough.
Do you think, Ronnie, that Southgate and England have an embarrassment of riches? I mean, do they have too many wonderful, talented players in their squad? I know that sounds kind of ridiculous to say in a way, but even you see the players coming off the bench in their game last week against Czech Republic the other night, the likes of Rashford coming off the bench, Sancho, Bellingham, and they were missing Mount and Chilwell, and they still had a great team out. Jack Grealish didn't even get in the team in the first few games. Has Southgate too many players to pick from? Is that a problem for him? I mean, is that a weird thing to say?
We say this so many times about England and the riches of talent they've got in the squad and never win anything. And that's going back to your great eras when the new generation of Gerard Lampard, Scholes, this is a magnificent team. Manager didn't know which way to play, Gerard Lampard and Scholes, so it all gets hickledy-pickledy. And I think this is what's happening with England at the moment. He's not 100% sure which way his best players, or who are his best players, to win certain positions. And they're struggling to hit top form. You know, there is still time. Maybe they'll do it against Germany. But looking at them over the first three games, I don't see them getting high enough performances to go on and win the tournament. But I can see them getting through against Germany.
And if they do get through against Germany, they'll have a handy enough draw, you'd imagine, because they'll play the winners of Sweden versus Ukraine. And I think England would be happy enough to face either of them, wouldn't they, if they can get past Germany?
Yeah, most definitely. It's been a good draw for them along the way. But you've got to think Sweden have topped their group with 7 points. Ukraine, I had a sneaky bet on Ukraine at the start of the tournament. So I'd have to stay with Ukraine. I think Ukraine, when they come... when they get better, shall I say, they will have enough to beat Sweden. Ukraine can be very, very dangerous if they reach top performance.
What team has impressed you most overall, Ronnie, in the Euros so far? Without kind of saying they're definitely going to go out and win it, who has been your team so far that you're saying, Jesus, these guys could win it? They're looking good. They're looking very, very impressive. I mean, there's been a lot of good football on display, but who do you fancy?
For me, the outstanding team in the whole start has been Italy. I didn't think they were as good as they were, but it's like watching one of your Premiership games, Liverpool or Man City, and they're just on the front foot, they're closing down, which has not always been like the Italians. The Italians always sat back and we'll defend and we'll win 1-0 somewhere. No, this is a different team. They defend great with Chiellini, who's injured, and Bonucci, and they get bodies into midfield and they get people forward, but they're all working hard for each other. You see when they score... subs, everybody's together. They seem a well-oiled team and a very, very close-knit group of lads. So Italy would have surprised me. I didn't think they were that good.
Great stuff. Listen, Ronnie, thanks a million for chatting to us about Euro 2020. It's great to have the Euros on a year later and all the football to watch. It's been good so far. Plenty more to come. And we will chat to you about it on the show again next weekend.
Cheers, Colin. Thank you.
Nice one. And just as I say that, another goal has gone in the last few minutes there as we were chatting to Ronnie for Denmark. So it is now Wales 0, Denmark 2. Kasper Dahlberg getting his second goal of the game there on 48 minutes for Denmark there, and they lead Wales 2-0. You have to fancy them now. There's only about a half an hour or so left in that match. So Denmark 2, Wales 0 is how it stands there in the last 16 of the Euros. As we said there with Ronnie, Italy in action later against Austria. And Ronnie fancies Italy. I kind of fancy Italy myself. I think Portugal will do all right still as well with Ronaldo. Maybe I think England will probably do all right too if they can get past Germany. But getting past Germany is easier said than done. But I'm looking forward to that game, especially on Tuesday evening at 5 o'clock. Now we're talking matters closer to home, and Cork City back in action last night. And Cork City's very poor season continued, unfortunately, last night. Disappointment after their win last week against Athlone Town. They won 2-0 in Athlone, but they were beaten again last night by Shelburne up in Dublin. 2-1 was the final score in favour of Shells in Talca Park last night. An old stomping ground over the years for Cork City. Great battles with Shelburne over the years. And Cork City, in fairness, last night, I watched the match on LOI TV, and they put in quite a good performance. It was better than a lot of performances earlier in the season, and they were unlucky. Cork City were unlucky not to get a point last night, I have to say. Shelburne got the win, but they got a first half goal shells, and they took the lead heading into half time. Cork City equalised through Cian Murphy with a nice goal early in the second half, and then only a few minutes later a very silly error from Cork City cost them, and Shells got the second goal to give them a 2-1 advantage. City had chances towards the end of the game to equalise, but it wasn't to be. And afterwards, Oisin Langan was there for us. He caught up with Cork City manager Colin Healy, who was obviously disappointed.
Colin, how frustrating is it that their winner came from a mistake?
Yeah, no, very frustrating. As I said, listen, we got back into the game by a great goal by Cian Murphy, and to give away a goal like that, especially against a team like they're a good side, but it's very, very frustrating. We've been here before. Mistake again, we get punched for it.
What were the positives of the performance? Because there were some. You got your way back into the game, and even after you conceded, you created chances.
And we did, Jan. We created a chance. We had a chance there at the end as well, like, but we didn't take it. But I mean, when you're given, we knew coming up with, listen, set plays, they're very, very dangerous, and they score from one. You know, I thought we could have done better than that. But if we give a silly goal like that, yeah, you're going to get punished for it.
How do you cut out those mistakes?
To be fair, there's happened a lot of them this year. The boys need to learn. They need to learn is that, listen, if you give Michael O'Connor and you give, the boy Brennan, if you give them chances, they'll score, and that's what happened tonight.
Cargo came on, he looked really, really lively, really got at Shells.
Yeah, no, he did. Eunice is a good lad. He came on wide right, and he was lively. But I thought everybody as a team. We never gave up. I said, listen, we could have got the equaliser there at the end, but unfortunately, it wasn't.
How do you react to this? Because as I say, there was positives, but ultimately, it's a defeat. So what do you do to bounce back?
Well, we got to go again up for Treaty next week.
Yeah, it's Cork City versus Treaty next week in Turner's Cross. 7:45 kickoff in Turner's Cross on Friday night, and hopefully City can bounce back and get some much needed wins on the board. But Colin Healy there, very understandably disappointed and frustrated after last night's game with the mistakes that cost City so dearly again. We're going to talk to a man now who was involved in many much bigger clashes between Cork City and Shelburne over the years, when both Cork City and Shelburne were vying it out for the Premier League title and playing in Europe every year and so on, and both had magnificent teams back around kind of 2004-2005 time. George O'Callaghan, Cork City legend, winner with Cork City of the league in 2005, joins me now. How's it going, George?
Very good, Colin. Nice to speak to you again after all the lockdown and everything.
Absolutely. And come here to me, Cork City last night losing out to Shelburne. It wasn't a bad performance, but it was a very silly error, as Colin Healy mentioned there, to give away the second goal very soon after they equalised. And I suppose, as Colin mentioned, they've done that kind of thing quite a bit this season. Silly mistakes has cost Cork City quite a bit.
Yeah, they have, I suppose when Colin took the job, like we always say, it's like a big job ahead of everyone. But I think we said that with John Carter. We said it with Fenny and Joe as well, you know. But those mistakes are really costly. And I suppose when you look at the whole season so far, I think it's 13 games and they're 12 points. Mm. So, it must be really frustrating for Colin, you know. And I always say, you're better to be a lucky manager than a good manager, you know. And he probably just doesn't have that luck on his side at the minute.
Yeah, they haven't been having much luck at all, but kind of hoping that they've turned a bit of a corner after the Athlone win last week. They had a 2-0 win up in Athlone, and as we said, the performance was much better against Shelburne. It was really that silly error that cost them. Do you think, George, that the more this young team kind of plays together, the more they might gel? And obviously Colin has them in training 5 days a week as well. Do you think they might click eventually? And they only need to get into the top five to get that playoff spot.
Yeah, well, I think when you look at it, even though they only have 12 points, they're only 6 points off Bray, you know, that are in that other playoff spot. And I think, you know, it is a really tough job for Colin. But, you know, Cork City, I suppose, if you go back and you look at it, then all the times that I was working with you and Red FM, since Shawnee Maguire left, everything has really fallen apart. And it's constantly, like, going one bit after another. And I just feel we kind of don't know which way the club's or direction the club's going to go in, you know what I mean? And they need to fall upon like a good striker like they did years ago with Flinney or somebody like that in the transfer window to get somebody to come in and score goals and do something like that. But, you know, they really need a bit of luck, and they do need like to find a player that can come in and score goals and a midfielder that can create. And so, like, it's a really, really hard job for them.
It is, and I think you're dead right. I think it's been very evident all season, and Colin has spoken about this himself and lots of other observers as well. Like, Cork City have been creating chances, but they can't put away the goals, and they're not scoring the goals they need to go out and pick up points and to win games. And it's been a big problem for quite a while, as you mentioned, George, the lack of a striker. Do you think that's exactly what they need? If they got a striker that could bang in the goals, it would make all the difference.
yeah, like they need a striker, but where do you get a striker from, you know, because they obviously have a budget and everybody wants a striker that scores goals, you know, right? Every club in the world is looking for that. And like, you know, if you can't afford to get in top guys like they could before, or find or have that scout network, then it's going to be really difficult. And for Colin, like, he needs to just have that bit of luck, like I keep saying, that he finds a player somewhere that comes in and sets everyone on fire again, like Shawnee did, when Flinney did, like when you go back to Caulfield and Morley, you know, they had Wiggy and Dab years and years ago. You need to find that, and Cork don't have that anymore, you know, and they're just missing out on that kind of, that extra bit that normally that we had lads coming back from the UK or whatever that could come in and have that pride of playing for Cork City, but we just don't seem to have that at the minute. So I really don't see kind of what direction they're going in, but like, I wish Colin all the luck in the world, but like, and it is a very difficult job for him, because at the end of the day, we're the biggest club in Ireland, and we're like, what, we're sitting third bottom in the first division. So like, you know, it's really frustrating as a fan or an ex-player to watch it, you know, because we want them to be doing well. We want them to be competing for the Premier League, never mind the first division.
Yeah, they need to get back up to the Premier League as soon as possible. Do you think they can, George, as the season goes on, pick up those points needed to get into those playoff places? As you mentioned, they're only 6 points off the playoffs. So, I mean, all it takes is a couple of wins to get in there. And if they get into the playoff spots at the end of the season, you never know what might happen.
Yeah, like anything is possible. And I think when last year, when you looked at Galway United, when Caulfield took over Galway United, they were struggling. And the lads can go on a run and they can get in there, and if they get in there, anything could happen, because, you know, if you bring anyone to Thornish Cross, you've got a great chance, and hopefully that by then, like, you know, the crowds will be back and they've got like the shed behind them, the whole lot. But like, at the minute, I suppose realistically looking at it this year, they're probably just trying to settle down the whole club, settle down the team, trying to find the right direction to go in, because otherwise, to be honest, Colm, I can't see it, but I hope it does happen. But I think it's going to take the next season again to really have a good push to get out of that first division.
Fingers crossed. George, did it bring back memories seeing Cork City and Talca Park of your own games up there? There was a serious rivalry back in kind of 2004, 2005 between Cork City and Shells, and you played in some fiery games up there.
It is. You know. I think it's, you know, everyone knows how much I care about Shelburne, and but like, I've just finished watching the women's game there, and unfortunately they've lost 1-0 as well. The Shells said, so it's not been a great weekend for us. But you know, you don't want Shells being ahead of you, like, and you know, going back to the old days, and I suppose, like, you know, it was great rivalry between the two of us, but you know, it's so frustrating, I suppose, Colm, as a City fan, and when my small son's watching it, and you're like, going, we were the best when I was there, but like, I know at this situation, like, you know, it's really sad to see the way the club is going.
We're talking about young players coming through at Cork City, George, and you're working with a lot of young players from a very young age at the moment yourself through your own football academy. 10 Rising is your football academy, and it's basically kind of an academy that develops skills and experiences for kids, and you've world-class coaches involved, and you kind of bring kids through and give them coaching programs and stuff as well. Tell us a little bit about the academy, George, and how you're helping out young players in, I suppose, Cork and further afield in Ireland, and I believe you're involved over in the UK and so on as well.
Yeah, we set up an academy about 18 months ago, so we had a lot of time in lockdown to start it out. Our kind of aim is to build kids up and build their confidence, whether they want to play in England or they want to play for Ireland or they want to play for their local team. It's just improving their skills. And our whole academy in the UK that we have as well and in Ireland is just to help the kids and progress and let it be fun and take that kind of pressure and stress away from them and give them that guidance that they need. Because I suppose everybody that plays football wants to be a Ronaldo or a Messi, and unfortunately that doesn't happen. But our whole structure of 10 Rising is that we bring the kids in, we coach them, we give them the advice that they need, and we just show them the direction that they need to go in, you know, and just to practice on the first touch or the finishing or defending, attacking, the whole lot. So it's fun for the kids, and there's no pressure, and hopefully they benefit from it and they learn from the coaches that we have. We've got CR coaching in at the minute that are running it for us with Craig Robertson, like, who's a fantastic coach, and we just give them that guidance that they need in football, and just to let them know that to go and enjoy the game, you know, because I played the game for long enough and I know the stress and pressure you're put under, and I know parents, we all want our kids to be footballers, but you know, it doesn't happen. I think it's 0.09% that become footballers, and we just want to show them that it's about enjoying the game and learning the game and having the right structure of it.
And I suppose you'd be hoping that some players will kind of, as you say, it's fun for the kids involved, but it's also probably a serious pathway to get through the Ten Rising Academy and eventually maybe kind of work your way up to a Cork City or a League of Ireland club, or maybe to a club over in the UK or so on, because there obviously will be some talented players that do kind of kick on up to another level always, isn't there?
Yeah, no, exactly. And like at the minute, we have our performance pathways program over in the UK. And we literally have kids coming out of Ipswich, Cambridge, Norwich, Birmingham City that are coming to us because of the setup that we have with the coaches and the coaches and the contacts that they want to come and train with us, so they know that when they're 18 or 19, they can move on and go to clubs and they're ready to go instead of, I suppose, living under the pressure of being in an academy and let go when you're 14 or 15 is disheartening for kids. So our whole program is set about looking after the kids and having that structure for them that they don't get released when they're 13 or 14 and told they're not good enough. They can stick with us. And as they develop, because kids change in all those years, you know, you see a massive difference from lads when they're 13, 14 to when they're 16 or 17. They get that structure with us that they can move on and like at least have more of a chance of not being disheartened by letting go by clubs, but at least they're with us. And then if we can do whatever possible for them, we help them out.
Brilliant. And you're running some summer camps around the country as well this summer, I believe, George.
Yeah, no, we have about 8 or 9 around Cork and Tipperary in the summer. We've got our first one kicking off in Whitechurch on Monday, so that's really exciting. And you know, all the coaches delighted. You know, all our coaches. You know, it's all Cork City or Cove Ramblers or Treaty United players. So you know what, they're being coached by like people that are in the game and are experienced in the game and know the whole structure of the game. So it's exciting. And if I was a kid back when I was young, I would have loved to have been at a camp like that because you're dealing with people that are playing like week in, week out in the Premier League or the First Division in the Irish League. So it's fantastic.
Sounds class. More info you can check out for those for that academy and so on. 10 Rising Football Academy. It's 10rising.com and 10 Rising on Instagram and so on as well. Listen, George, thanks a million for chatting to us. And hopefully next time we're chatting, we're talking about a Cork City victory.
Thank you, Colin.
Nice one, Cork City legend George O'Callaghan talking about the Ten Rising Football Academy and Cork City's defeat to Shelburne last night. Right, on the way, it's a big night for the Cork Lady Footballers up against Dublin in the league final in about an hour's time. It's throwing in at Croke Park. We will be going live to Croke Park next to preview that game. And we're also talking Olympics between now and 7 p.m.
The Big Red Bench. Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m. Cork's Red FM. Missed the show? Grab the Big Red Bench podcast at redfm.ie. Cork's Red FM.
Yeah, it's Colm O'Sullivan with you until 7 o'clock on the Big Red Bench. Lots to get through up the walls this evening. So much sport because Cork in action tonight. The Cork Lady Footballers, it's a big, big night for them. They face Dublin in the Lidl Ladies National Football League final. It's actually a repeat of last year's All-Ireland final with the Rebels looking for revenge because Dublin were victorious last year. Not even a year ago. It's more like 6 or 7 months ago that final was on. Throwing at Croke Park is at 7:30 and we're going live to Croke Park now. Ger McCarthy, the host of the Cork's Red FM Women in Sport podcast, is there for us ahead of tonight's Cork and Dublin clash in Croke Park. Ger, how are you getting on?
I'm very good, Colin. Very good. Good to talk to you.
Great stuff. And the atmosphere building there in Croke Park and anticipation building, Ger, ahead of this evening's game. And I mean, these two are real arch rivals at this stage, Dublin and Cork, aren't they? And it's a repeat of last year's final.
It is indeed, and they met in the All-Ireland final only 6 months ago on a weird December afternoon in empty Croke Park when Dublin won. They've met since then in an absolute epic in the league. Earlier this season, we were there as well, and we were covering that one, and that one produced 7 goals, but again, Dublin came out on top. So Cork are heading into this as the 2019 league champions. It wasn't played last year because of COVID, but Dublin are the reigning All-Ireland champions and have beaten Cork on the last 2 or 3 occasions that they've met. It promises to be another humdinger. It's going to be close. And the anticipation even here as I watch the Kerry and Meath game, league final, it's building. It's definitely building.
Absolutely. And no changes for the Cork side from their semi-final victory over Donegal. And they were quite impressive in that game as well, Ger.
Yeah, not surprising. I think on that occasion, like they met one of the top teams in the country, and over the league campaign, Evie Fitzgerald has been a pains to say that he uses the league to build towards the championship that he wants to win. Obviously, and Cork have had a few scares this year. They were pushed to the limit, obviously by Dublin down in Cork before losing. They were pushed to the limit by Waterford before coming out on top there, and they needed another bunch of goals, 5 goals against Donegal to see them off in Bovin Chum. So they have been pushed, but the team has pretty much settled now, and I think the team that he's picked is about the strongest he possibly could have selected, considering who's out injured. You're talking Niamh Cotter, you're talking Darren O'Sullivan. Anya Terry O'Sullivan is back on the bench. Marie Ambrose as well is back there. Good to see her name on the bench as well. But right here and right now, heading towards the league final, I think this is probably his strongest team. And when you look at the forward line, it's a new look forward line this year, but it's got Saeve O'Leary from Kinsale and Libby Coppinger either side of Ciara O'Sullivan, who for me and for a lot of people has been the breakout star this year for Cork. The Moran Abbey star, she's named a full forward. I expect her to feature on the centre forward line, but herself and Bria O'Sullivan, her Moran Abbey teammate, have been combining brilliantly, and hopefully they will do again. The other forward to keep an eye out on is Orla Finn from Kinsale, who has been in blistering form. With Darren O'Sullivan out, she's taken on the mantle of the top scorer. She's deadly from frees, but also really playing well, linking up from play either on the 40 or even on the inside forward line. So this Cork team is primed. They really want to get one over Dublin, but they're going to have to be at their very best if they want to do that.
Big time. And how much of a loss, in your opinion, is the likes of Darren O'Sullivan? I mean, a stalwart for Cork. Or do you think that the players coming in, that they have the talent to cover that loss?
I think there is enough talent now on the way in that may not have been there in previous years to compensate for her loss. But the thing is, Darren O'Sullivan is and remains, in my opinion, the best forward in the country. Yeah. And I include Dublin in that. When she's on form, when she's fully fit, she's as effective and she's capable of scoring and knitting together that forward line better than anyone else in the country, not just in Cork. But when you look at the likes of Laura Manny, like Sarah Hayes isn't involved, Sarah Leahy isn't involved, and you look at the bench, Cork have a very, very strong panel, probably their strongest now for the last couple of years, and they need it because it's no longer a 15-player game. You need those 5 players to come off the bench and to make a big, big impact. And Cork can do that. They can call on the likes of Dara Kiley. They can call on the likes of Bride Rovers, Katie Quirk, another newcomer who's done well. Eimear Scally is back in the squad. And we haven't even mentioned some of the other players that would normally, you'd expect to be featuring, like Orla Farmer. And as I said, Anya Terry O'Sullivan being named on the bench is interesting. I expect that we'll see her at some stage tonight. But Dirren's loss has opened the door, and not just Dirren's column either, but last year's full forward line, and that's not even 6 months ago in the All-Ireland final, was Darren O'Sullivan, Anya Terry O'Sullivan, and Saoirse Noonan, who has gone on to sign for Shelburne and play full-time soccer now.
That's right, yeah.
They've been replaced by a younger and a more agile full forward line rather than a strong physical forward line. So you've got Saeve O'Leary from Kinsale, who's come in and had a brilliant season, really made her mark. Hopefully she can do that again tonight against the Dubs. And then you've Libby Coppinger, the dual player. She's named a corner forward, the St. Cullum's player, another player with a lot of experience. And I think it's a different Cork forward line. It definitely misses Darren O'Sullivan, but they've worked very hard to compensate for not just Darren's absence, but Anya Terry's and Saoirse's and all the other players that are injured as well. They're certainly not afraid to go for goals. They've been scoring goals for fun. Will they be able to do that tonight, though, is the big question. But yeah, Evie Fitzgerald has an array of talent to pick from, so he's lucky, because any other county that would lose like Darren O'Sullivan would struggle.
Looking at the Dublin side, just one change for the Dublin side as well. And if you look at their starting team and even their bench, it's packed with All-Ireland, serial All-Ireland winners, really, over the last few years. That is a strong, strong, talented panel and squad, isn't it?
It is. I'm laughing because we talk about the strength of Cork's panel, and then you look across the field, and then you look across the bench. I mean, any forward line that's got Sinead Ahern, Lindsay Davey, Niamh Heatherton from Clontarfin put forward now tonight, and as well, the big, big worry for me tonight, Cullum, is Na Fianna's Hannah Tyrrell, the ex-Irish rugby international who came back and absolutely scorched Cork down in Parky Cueve the last night. She was just, sometimes she was unmarkable. If she's in the mood, it's going to be very, very hard to curb her influence. Is going to be very hard to stymie her ability to knit, defence with attack. And if she gets in around that goal, like, you're in big, big trouble. But you're right, this Dublin team is built to win an All-Ireland, not just a league title. I know they want to win another league title, and defeating Cork for the third time in a row in a competitive fixture, don't think for one second that Mick Bowen hasn't said that to the Dublin team. Like, with the greatest respect to everyone that's playing in this year's All-Ireland Senior Championship, these are the two big teams. These are the two most decorated teams. These are the two most qualified
to go for it again this year. They have the strength and depth, not just on the panel, but even the players that can't make the panel. I mean, I've made the point before that Cork could very, very easily put out a second team and not do badly at all in the Ireland Championship. And I'm afraid the same is true of Dublin. That just both teams and both counties are blessed right now to have the amount of talent to call upon that they do. But when you look at that Dublin team, like you rightly said, Sinead Ahern, Hannah Tyrrell, Jennifer Dunn midfield with Siobhan McGrath, I mean, Leah Caffrey, Niamh Collins fullback, and Lauren McGee, who I haven't even mentioned on the half-back line. This is experience. This is All-Ireland talent. This is the cream of the crop. And that's why tonight's game is so anticipated, because it's the two best teams in the country.
Dublin have won 4 out of 4 in the campaign so far, Ger. They edged out Cork, as we spoke about when you were on with us having a chat a few weeks ago, in a 7-goal thriller in Páirc Uí Chaoimh in the group stages. And, I mean, that game was a real cracker of a game as well. So we expect something similar there tonight in Croke Park?
Oh, I hope so, Colm. I mean, even as a journalist, like, you're calling it down the middle as you're reporting it and reporting back on it, but everyone in, there was nobody in the stadium that night, all the journalists and media people that were lucky enough to be there that night. What a game, end to end. Not a great game for Mick Bone and Aoife Fitzgerald, or maybe their heart race, to be fair to either of them. And it wasn't really a night that defences played badly. This is the thing. It's just there's so much attacking talent on the pitch. Every time the ball moves into the final third, that's the killer instinct about these two teams. They go for goal. Now, the good news for Cork is they got in behind that Dublin defence on numerous occasions. They wasted as many chances as they scored that night. Will we get that same type of match tonight? I'm not so sure. I hope so, but I'm not so sure. I think both teams will lock down their defences a bit more. And it's interesting that Emma Spillane from Bantry Blues is named as a half-forward. She normally drops back into the defence. That half-back line, though, Colm, if you're asking me where this game is going to be won and lost, it's in the middle third of the pitch, because Cork need Mauro Callan and Hannah Looney to kick on in midfield. They've had a great year together, but they need to deliver tonight for the full 60 minutes. And it's that half-back line. It's one of the best of the country, and I'd rate it higher than Dublin's. Colm, Eric O'Shea from Macroom, Aisling Hutchings from Fermoy, and Melissa Duggan from Donnies. Every chance they get, they're going forward. They are bombing forward. And they help the attack, because they take attention away from the runners, and Cork create the spaces to get those goals. And it's the same for Dublin. Dublin are no slouches either in the half-back line. Leah Caffrey, Alwyn Carey and Lauren McGee all there again tonight. It's a fascinating battle, but I think it'll be more of a chess battle tonight with that little bit more on the line. I don't know if we'll see the open attacking craziness that we saw down in Páirc Uí Chaoimh. I hope so for everybody watching it, for everybody afterwards tuning into the Big Red Bench tomorrow to hear all about it. But I think we'll have a very, very tight final. We may not get the goals fest that we got the last time, but we're guaranteed a cracker.
Right, Charles, you look around your beautiful surroundings there in Croke Park. You're calling a tight final, but I'm going to put you under pressure. If you had to pick a winner here now on the bench and go either way, who would you go for?
Cork have basically gotten into Dublin's heads the last two times they played. In the All-Ireland final, they let it slip in the third quarter. In Páirc Uí Chaoimh last week, or last couple of weeks ago, they let it slip in the final quarter. If Cork deliver a full 60-minute performance, I think they can beat the Dubs tonight. I really, really do. But, and I hate to say it, I still think Dublin are that step ahead. The gap is narrowing, and it's never, ever been closer. But a league final, and I mentioned it earlier on the week, I wrote about it, the psychological blow Cork could deliver by just getting one over Dublin tonight would really set them up going into the All-Ireland Championship. But unfortunately, Colm, and I hope I'm wrong, I think Dublin will edge it, but only just.
But well, we all hope you're wrong on this occasion, Ger.
I hope so too.
Listen, enjoy the game, Ger. It's going to be a cracker. Cork versus Dublin in the Lidl National League Division 1 final. Cork and Dublin tonight in Croke Park, thrown at 7:30. Enjoy it, Ger. And hopefully you're wrong and we're talking about a Cork win tomorrow.
I hope so too. Thanks, Colm. Talk to you soon.
Fingers crossed. All right. We're going to turn our attentions now to the Olympics, because the Olympics in Tokyo is on the horizon. Just like Euro 2020 is taking place now, the Olympics also delayed and taking place 12 months later. Actually, before we do that, let's get an update from the Euros, because there is not much time left in Amsterdam. There's only about a minute of normal time left, and Wales are on the way out of the tournament, unfortunately. Just literally in the last few seconds, Denmark have added a third goal. It is now Wales 0, Denmark 3. Kasper Dahlberg getting 2 goals there for Denmark, and Joachim Maeli, I think that's how you pronounce his name, just getting the most recent one there in 89 minutes as well. So Denmark 3, Wales 0. Later on, it's Italy and Austria. But it is the Olympics on the horizon, and we're going to talk Olympics now because Valerie Wheeler has been speaking to Olympian and current Team Ireland psychologist Jesse Barr during the week. Let's take a listen to Valerie talking to Jesse Barr now ahead of the Olympics.
Joining me on the Big Red Bench this week is Jesse Barr, Olympian and current Team Ireland psychologist. She joins us this week as FBG launched the Sound Support Campaign to support Team Ireland at the Tokyo 2020 Olympics. FBG are primary sponsors of Team Ireland, and they are proud to support Team Ireland as they chase their Olympic dreams. So Jesse, first of all, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
With only weeks to go to Tokyo, what is it like as an athlete, maybe building up this time?
You know what? I feel like there's a sense of relief that it's happening. It's been a long run in. It's been a 5-year wait for this game. So I think there's just the excitement, the relief. It's happening. We're going. And obviously now that we're getting closer, so the nerves, the anxiety, those kind of things are starting to creep in again because performance is happening pretty soon. The games are only weeks away. So yeah, it's a busy time, but it's a really exciting time.
Are you able to be excited and relax in the build-up this, or is it all a bit much?
Look, I'm excited for it. It's my first time working as, you know, working as part of the support team for an Olympics. So it's a really exciting time. It's an amazing opportunity for me professionally. And, you know, it's been a tough year and a half of supporting athletes through uncertainty and difficult times and the challenge that we've had. So this is the bit that I like. This is the bit I want to be doing, is preparing them for performance, preparing them for the big competitions. So yeah, look, I'm enjoying it. Would I say I'm relaxing all the time? No, but that's the part of it. This is the busy time. And, you know, anyone who works in sport, there's going to be those busy periods. And this is for us in Olympic sport, it's going to be the summertime. So no, you know, I'm embracing every moment of it, every text that you get, or, you know, Zoom calls, still on Zoom calls that I have, you know, they're all more positive because they're now talking about performing at the games and what that would look like instead of the uncertainty of will I have a race this weekend and that kind of stuff. So it's just been really great.
Do you use your own experience of London in 2012 maybe to talk to them about it, or?
Yeah, look, I don't offer it up constantly, but it definitely helps, you know, in terms of building that empathy with the athlete. You know, they know that I've been there. And I think sometimes it's not even the kind of preparing them for the performance, because look, at the end of the day, a track is a track, a pool is a pool, a hockey pitch is a hockey pitch. It's often all the noise and the fanfare around the games and kind of saying, God, you know, this is something that I would have felt, you know, in the few months leading up to the games. Have you felt that? You know, even things like this, a lot of media around it. You know, you might hear your name mentioned more than usual. How are you finding that? I found sometimes that it was like, whoa, God, people are talking about me and no one knew who I was last year. So, you know, I'm able to use my experience to kind of get them talking about different things, get them thinking, and then say, okay, well, what can we do to help you manage this? So, yeah, I think it's great that I have the experience. I think I'd find it very challenging had I never been to a games to now work and prepare for this games particularly, because, you know, whether as an athlete or staff, it is a hugely unique challenge, regardless of whether COVID had affected it. It's still very different to anything that I've ever done. So just having the experience and knowing what that looks like and that build up feels like has definitely been valuable, maybe for me nearly more so than the athletes, of knowing what to expect and when the wobbles may or may not happen.
Is this your second year that you're retired from competitive action? Is this 2019?
Yeah, 2019. I kind of had it was a long build up into retirement. So it's probably going on 3 years at this stage since, you know, I kind of really did make the decision in 2018, but it was only because there was actually an interview in the 2019 that it became like, oh, she's retired. You know what it was? It was great because I was prepared to talk about it. When I hung up my spikes initially in 2018, I was still very upset and kind of took a while to kind of, embrace the transition into as member of staff. So it was a tough time. So actually when it eventually you know, I kind of publicized in 2019, which is not really an intentional thing. It's just I was asked in an interview. I was ready to talk about them that I may not have been, because it is a difficult transition for any athlete. You know, it's letting go of a big part of your identity. So, yeah, no, it was a challenge because I went on and went to two different European Games and European Youth Olympic Festival as part of the team. So I was forced to transition very quickly. Whereas now I'm staff and I'm there to support the athletes in my capacity. And I'm just really excited and embracing that now.
For you, maybe was it a slow realization that you probably had to retire because of maybe injuries and, you know, things that were niggling you?
Yeah, no, it was just a constant, you know, constant injury cycle and rehab cycle that I found myself in. I got to the stage where I was working in the Institute. I had did a summer internship, had secured a traineeship position, and it was kind of looking like there was a future there for me within the Institute. And I was going to have to make a difficult decision at some stage whether I wanted to keep competing during the summer or work. And it kind of forced my hand of a decision that I was putting off making, but knew I was going to make eventually. So it was great that I had something to transition into so quickly and be able to kind of refocus on and kind of give me something else to think about and create a new identity. It was still a slow transition, but you know, the injuries were going to force me out of it regardless. So having something else to kind of force that decision is probably exactly what I needed, or I could be still kind of going, oh no, I'm still competing kind of, you know, needs to come to an end because it was holding me back.
Do you think that nowadays more than ever that people have come to the realization that sports psychologists are so amazing and a vital part of a team?
God, I hope they think we're amazing. No, I'm joking. But yeah, you know what? I think a lot of people were on board with that anyway. I think maybe when I went to the Institute, I was surprised at how many people were using sports psychologists, because believe it or not, I never saw a sports psychologist when I was an athlete because I was studying it.
Okay.
Like, I know what they're going to tell me. I don't need that. I did, but I couldn't see that at the time. I was just too stubborn. But I was surprised, I think, at how many people were using sports psychology now when I went and became part of the staff in the Institute and how common it was. But I think as much as COVID was a negative in so many ways, I think a positive was that people were really recognizing not only the benefit of psychology for performance, but also how important it is to just mind my well-being if I want to be the best athlete I can be. And I think conversation around mental health and well-being is much more open now since over the last 2 years in the pandemic. More athletes are kind of seeing it as something that's there to talk about, because we were all facing the exact same thing for the first time. Everyone had the same challenge. Everyone's finding it hard. Everyone struggles at different points. So I think definitely coming out of the pandemic and going forward, more and more people have embraced it than even had 2 years ago, which is really, really positive.
Can you tell us maybe as a sports psychologist, what exactly you do with an athlete maybe? What are the things that they'd come to you for? I know there's probably a wide variety of things, but if you can give us a little rundown, we'd love it.
No, you know what? It's good because it's one of those disciplines that people go, well, I know if I go to a nutritionist, what they're going to do. I know if I go to a physio, what they're going to do. What is the sports psychologist? And, you know, in the Institute, it's funny because, you know, sometimes there is that perception of like, well, I'm going to have my clipboard and my glasses at the end of my nose and you're going to lie down and talk about your feelings. When I first saw the consultation rooms in the Institute, there is a sofa and two armchairs. And I was going, oh, obviously I knew that's not what it was used for, but it was just to create, like, if you were to walk in during a sports psychology consultation with an athlete, it probably just sounds like a chat. Sometimes it sounds like you could be having coffee with a friend. But, you know, the reasons an athlete might kind of start working with me could be, you know, kind of wobbles in their confidence. They don't feel confident in themselves and their ability. They don't have that self-efficacy to go out and compete at the new high levels they're now reaching. Maybe motivation, like during COVID, they were not motivated to train and looking at strategies for that. General things like mental skills training, like helping them to set goals, learning how to do some relaxation breathing techniques that might help with nerves. I would say why most athletes would come to me, you know, in the beginning is I get really nervous. Can you help me get rid of them? And they learn straight away in the very first minute, I can't help you get rid of the nerves, but we're going to develop coping strategies. And I suppose that's probably the number one thing I do is develop the athlete's coping strategies so that they can go away and apply them. Like, say, like developing toolkit. Like, here's all the things that if I get nervous, I know I can do X, Y, and Z. I can think about this. I can refocus on that. And the nerves are not going to affect my performance.
That is Jessie Barr, Olympian and current Team Ireland psychologist, talking to Valerie during the week ahead of the Olympics, the Tokyo Olympics, of course. The Euro 2020 opening game of the last 16, the first game of the last 16, just full time there now in the Amsterdam Arena, and Denmark have given Wales a right hammering in the end. Just in the last few minutes, they've added another goal in the 94th minute. Martin Braithwaite adding their fourth goal, and Harry Wilson was sent off in the 91st minute for Wales as well. So it's finished Wales 0, Denmark 4 is how it's finished there in that game at the Amsterdam Arena. The other game of the evening is Italy versus Austria. That kicks off at 8 p.m. That is us out of time. Rory will be here with you tomorrow on the Big Red Bench from 6 p.m. And I'm back with you on air on the 10 to 2 show tomorrow morning from 10 a.m. I'll chat to you then. Enjoy your Saturday night, whatever you're doing, and stand by for Stevie G.
Missed the show? Grab the Big Red Bench podcast at redfm.ie. Cork's Red FM.